All right, we have Captain Charles Conrad here, the commander of Apollo 12, and he's going to answer your questions. And if you'll wait, answer your questions on the lunar activities today and yesterday, and if you'll wait for the microphone, why, he'll answer the questions. First question? Right over here.
Compare these two EVAs and some of the work they did with what you and Al Bean did.
Well, I think it ought to be very obvious without me saying anything. We were in a lot flatter, easier ground to move around in. I believe, first off, they stayed out longer than we did, and of course I believe they accomplished a lot more. If you want to try and put it in measurement terms, we only brought back some 78 pounds of rocks, as I remember, and they're up around 160. I think the interesting thing in listening to them describe the rocks, I believe they're going to bring back a lot of different material, at least from their descriptions, it sounded that way to me.
It's hard for any of us who haven't been up to the moon to visualize the difference in gravitational force and weight and so forth. Now, I was wondering, they were talking about picking up a football-sized rock, and I remember on your trip you referred to a rock the size of a grapefruit that you rolled down a hill. What does it feel like when you pick up one of these things? Is it like picking up a sponge or something, or does it seem to have the inertia and the weight that it would on Earth?
Well, I think maybe one thing I ought to clear up, the terminology grapefruit and football and so forth is something that we kind of came up with the geologists when they had some ideas, and they'd tell us how many grams and so many centimeters long, and being engineers, more or less why we said, how about giving it to us in friendly terms? So we were supposed to bring home a grapefruit-sized rock, and the reason for that was all our rocks were to fit in the rock box. So they were willing to give up space in the rock box in the size of one grapefruit-sized rock, which we tried to bring back. And now, you know, not all of their rocks are in boxes. They still only have two boxes, and of course the rest of the material they're bringing back is in bags. To answer the main part of your question, mass or the momentum up there, you can notice it. You notice it in your backpack. Although the backpack weighs 120 pounds, you're not aware of that weight. But if you turn very rapidly and put on the brakes, you're going to keep right on turning, just like you would here on the ground. So when you pick up a large rock up there, it does feel very light to you. But it still is going to have its momentum. If you drop it on the floor, you know, you'll feel it. So I don't know whether I described that well enough for you, but it too is 1/6 of what it's going to weigh when we get it back here.
I understand you say you thought they got 160 pounds.
160, I thought.
160. Well, someone said the query desk reported 108 pounds.
Well, I didn't listen.
I don't know.
I was in the control center listening to them. I understood yesterday got 63 pounds. Is that
I
right?
I think they've subtracted a lot of the weight of the containers and other things that they were bringing back, and they ended up, I think, with something around 100 pounds.
108? Okay.
Net.
Well, I was listening to the numbers they were giving off the scales, and I guess they were including in those numbers the rock boxes.
In your opinion, what do you feel are some of the most important things that they accomplished?
Well, I think the most important thing they accomplished was to make a successful landing in that area, really. I think that we're going to find out. I don't think that the television camera really showed you, because of washout, exactly how rough the terrain was. I just had the general impression, listening to them all the time, that they were in very hummocky, hilly terrain. They had a lot more boulders around, and I think when we see the photographs, you're going to realize that it was a horse of a different color where they landed. I think the probably most significant thing will be what I first mentioned. It sounds to me like they've got some material and rocks up there that at least by their description, sounded considerably different than the type rocks that we brought back.
This flight so far seems to have been bothered by a lot of little and some potentially dangerous mishaps and defects or whatever you might call them. Do you detect any pattern in this, or do you feel this was a lemon, or how do you look at it?
No, I don't think so. We had equally as many little troublesome sort of things, but ours didn't appear in the systems that were as paramount as... I think really the one that impressed everybody was this abort switch problem. And after we were hit by lightning, we had 8 measurements out in the spacecraft that we didn't have the use of, but they were not significant ones, and... we had the trouble with our cask, and I noticed Al's S-band antenna didn't deploy exactly correctly, and they fixed that. I think that's one of the advantages of having man aboard. Had we not had man aboard, perhaps the mission, and for some reason, might not have gone as well. So I think if you trace out all the flights, we've had little wrinkles in all of them. The docking probe, of course, again, it worked. But had it not, that happened to be an extremely important system, so I think everybody really got focused in on it.
Art Hill.
Pete, I'm wondering if, as you listen to the two walks, the one today and the one yesterday, if you can think of any improvements that might be added to some of the future Apollo flights, particularly this one where the terrain was rough and they did different things and they didn't quite make it to the top of the crater and so forth.
Well, I think one comment I heard Al make, and it's a comment we made, and it's already rectified because Apollo 15 will have the suits that you can bend over in, and I think Al made a comment about his suit being a little stiffer than he thought it was going to be up there. I think that the Met was an improvement. We look forward to the rover. They had drinking water. We're now looking at longer EVAs. We realize you can have to eat something. So these things are all coming. The general overall comment, I think that they took many of our comments, as we took many of those of Neil and Buzz, and tried to make our 4 hours more efficient. I think their 4 hours or 5 hour EVAs were more efficient than ours when you consider the territory that they were in. I think that we are looking forward to longer EVAs. The Nuplis has got more water in it, so that the 15 crew and subsequent are going to have greater stay times. I think they're going to listen very carefully because they're going to landing sites that are tougher each time. 15 is going to Davy Rill. And I think that these guys are going to have to listen to Al and Ed and think about this while they're putting their EVAs together and looking at the type terrain that they're going to be in and use the rover in. So other than the few I mentioned, I think we'll hear a lot more when they come back and say what it was they had trouble with.
Well, with that in mind, the one thing that strikes me on this is that trying to describe or try to work on a site in advance, there apparently are surprises in the terrain that they don't expect.
Yeah.
And I wonder about
good,
that.
Good question. Neil's site and our site, as it would work out, I guess, I don't know the history of Orbiter, but we had the best photography. We had 1 meter resolution out of our photography. The photography of the Frau Morrow area was about 2 meter resolution. So anything smaller than 6 feet is a surprise. It's very difficult, I think. I gathered that this was rather hummocky on a slope, but still having hummocks on it. Okay, these hummocks don't have to be too big to get in your way, and I kind of got the idea that they didn't expect to see them, mainly because of the resolution of the photography. This is even going to be a bigger problem on 15. Now, Stu had that camera up there, and I guess the camera, I don't know that it failed, but I understood that after so many frames, he thought that the camera was not working correctly. The resolution of the photography at Davy Rill is like 22 meters. So that can hide an awful lot of surprises in it. So I think you got to look at the overall picture and understand where we get the surprises. I know on our flight, because we had 1 meter resolution, a geologist up at USGS spent a month putting together a boulder map for me. And any shadow he could see down to 1 meter, and if it was a sharp one, he assumed was a boulder. Well, he had so many boulders on that thing that I was dreaming about them at night, and it turned out that instead of being boulders, they were all very small, you know, 1 meter craters. And when I came back, I kept commenting on the fact that I didn't see anywhere as near the number of rocks up there I expected to see. But by the same token, say with 22-meter resolution, that can hide an awful lot of big boulders, big depressions, and things that would be bothersome in landing. I feel if we continue into sites like that with that type photography, although I'm sure you can find a place, it would not surprise me if someday we arrive somewhere and just found that we were in a place where we really couldn't land.
Does it really mean to the mission that they didn't reach the side of the cone crater? Is it a disappointment?
I don't think so. In talking to the geologists, I think we would have liked to had photography down in there. Now, I'm not exactly sure where they got. I don't know whether they got photography down in there or not. But the main point in getting up in that area was to find the rock structure that they were looking for, and also to get the photography inside. I think it's a disappointment we didn't get the photography, but I think they got close enough to get into where they would expect to find that material. So I know that the geologists in the back room were not... I don't think it was as important not getting there as if we hadn't gotten our surveyor parts, I'll put it that way.
Excuse me. During the brief time you had television and on the Apollo 11 mission, it struck me, and from your comments, that it was remarkably easy to move around up there and to move around fairly quickly. And yet we had a situation today when they were moving uphill that it turned out... it apparently is not remarkably easy to move around, at least on a slant. Did this strike you, and could you explain a little about this?
Well, I think very definitely that you're not going to move as fast going uphill. I think they got back pretty quick, though. So I don't think that's any different than down here on the ground, really. Well, while you're going ahead, let me elaborate on that a little bit. I think we said when we came back and tried to explain that although you can take a big leap up there because you don't weigh very much, if you do take that leap, it doesn't really accomplish that much for you because you get out of shape, you're airborne too long, and you're going to pitch one way or the other. And it turns out this waddle sort of thing, if you really clock it out, the guy isn't moving much faster than he does down on the ground. And you do have the effects of momentum. Now, if you start hopping or really trying to keep a steady pace going up a hill, your workload's going to go up, even though you don't weigh too much. And I think that when the doctors come out with the BTU outputs over time periods, you're going to find that, and I don't think any different than doing it here on the ground, walking up a hill or walking the treadmill where they keep increasing the incline, I think you're going to find that it's just more difficult going uphill. And I don't think they had much trouble getting down. Now, throw the hummocks in there and a couple of bad craters and a few detours that they weren't aware they were going to have to make, and I think that that just all added up to them not getting quite as far as they thought they could get.
Right up here in the front row.
Well, are you trying to say that on the lunar surface that perhaps a walking up a 10-degree slope may be more difficult on the moon than it would be on Earth?
No, I'm just saying you're going to put out more work. Now, throw in the Met. I think another thing, too, when you are on a slope, realize that your ankles are bent in that suit. And I have the idea, and I'd be interested to talk to them when they get back, that you're going to find out that the steeper the slope, the more that you're, although you're light, you're getting interference from your suit.
Okay, right here.
I have two questions. When you were working on the moon, you fell down?
Yes.
Could you give us some details about that?
No big deal.
And the other question is, how? What is the size of the Earth when you see it from the moon?
The size of the Earth? Yes, it's four times bigger than if you're standing down here looking at the moon. Yes, which is still isn't very big. That's a big sky up there, so but it's noticeably bigger. But falling down, that's really no big deal. We practice over here in our pogo rig up to 20-25 degree slopes to get up, and about the only thing I established there was is if I was head down the slope over 20 degrees, I had to turn around to get up, to get my head uphill. Otherwise, you could get yourself back up just fine.
When it was first suggested bringing the docking probe back after the original trouble, you expressed disapproval of the idea and were worried in case it went through the bottom on re-entry. Have you any further thoughts now that it's been decided? But perhaps I'm... That was Colonel McDivitt, I'm sorry. Well, perhaps I could ask you what your view of it is then.
Well, other than the fact that it's a big blivet in there to stow, the spacecraft's perfectly able to handle it as long as the total weight of the spacecraft doesn't exceed the chute loads. I would want to make sure that I had it securely fastened. Now, if for any reason you got into a landing situation, whoever's couch the probe happened to be under would have an extremely hard ride if you stroke the couch, but you're not going to stroke the couch out on the water. So yesterday I was talking to a few people yesterday over in our building, some of our engineers, and North American had run a quick study, and we were lacking one tool, and they were hoping it might be the tool that we had in the LEM, but unfortunately it wasn't. We were lacking one tool on board, which would have enabled us to... we had several of the ones that were needed, but we were lacking the one, and that's why the idea was never put forth to the crew, which would have allowed them to knock it down into quite a few pieces. And that being the case, they probably could have stored it very reasonably. It is very large, and it would have to go somewhere along the lower equipment bay forward, where the couches are, leg pans are up in the 90 degree position, as they are in reentry. Now there is enough room up there to tie it down. We brought back the surveyor parts in a similar area, although they were not as big as the probe. Big thing everybody's concerned about, that probe weighs 80 pounds or 90 pounds, somewhere in there. If it ever broke loose on landing, I mean, it could be lethal, but and we have lots of cord in there that you could tie it down securely with. And I don't know what the disease, are they going to bring it back? Yeah. Well, that's that makes the question easy, doesn't it? It's up to them to figure out a place to put it.
You, under any circumstances, expect any change in the mass of anything brought back from the moon? The rocks, for example, which are gotten from underneath the surface, or perhaps some air from the moon?
I think your point is well taken. I'm sure the rocks that are not sealed in the box may be subject to slight oxidation, which could conceivably change the mass. But I think that it would be ever so slight, and I also feel that it would only be on the surface of the rock. So unless you're trying to measure down to atomic numbers or molecular numbers, I really don't think you could determine this.
Captain Conrad, can you tell us why Captain Shepard requested to have his second EVA much earlier, about 2 hours earlier than planned?
I understood that they did not sleep longer than, you know, they didn't use the whole rest period. I don't know how many hours they slept, but I understood they got up early. Like anybody else, I think the feeling is that you want to get on with the job, and if they're awake and they feel that they're not resting, I think that they wanted to get out. So did we. We got out a couple hours early on our second EVA. Just you want to get the job done and have the best chance for extensions if they're going to give it to you, and you don't want to be pressed at the end when you're going through your checklist for liftoff.
Right here, the lady.
They have the mobile cart on the next flight, on 15.
They're going to have the rover, the powered vehicle. Yes. Well, I think that's a very good point. When you have either as we had the tool carrier, or as Captain Shepard and Commander Mitchell had the Met, or you have a rover, to do the geology, it's going to take you a certain block of time when you decide you're at the place that you want to do the geology. You've got to unload the tools, whatever they may be for that mission, and go about doing the work. Also, to do any kind of a reasonable job at some site, you should spend 25-30 minutes if you've gotten to a point that the geologists have considered worthwhile, or in your opinion you've found a place in real time up there by looking, that you should stop and work. So I should say, for any hour, so much of that time is going to be occupied in doing the geology at that site. So the thing that the rover does for you is it allows you to make your samples over a greater distance. But if you had a 4-hour EVA, you would only do the same amount of geology in that 4 hours. However, the points would be spread over a greater distance. So I'm not sure that people don't get a little bit confused with that. In this particular case on their flight, although their EVA was a longer period of time than ours, they spent a greater time traversing from one point to another to do their sampling than we did on Apollo 12. So if you start adding numbers up of how many stops, you know, and maybe they weren't as efficient, you've got to realize their distances were greater. Now, and they were greater because they had the Met to carry all the equipment. So I think on the rover, this just allows us to hit sampling sites over a much greater distance, which should give us a better look at that particular area.
Would you please wait for the mic? Go ahead, right here.
I noticed on TV interviews that Aldrin and Armstrong both mentioned their samples having an odor like scorched ashes or firecrackers or something like this. Did you notice that?
And yes.
You explain what it was like?
I can't put a moniker on it as an example, but it had a very definite sort of odor, and I'm sure that this is the slight amount of oxidation. After all, these all those rocks and material have been in a completely oxygen-free environment, and I think you get just a little bit of oxidation. The dust that you've brought in, even if your rocks are all sealed up in the boxes, you've brought lunar material in with you on your suit, you get maybe just a little oxidation, and that creates something that you can smell. It's different. I really can't put a name on it. I know what you're talking about, but I didn't reckon it to anything that I could think of on the Earth.
Captain, is it your impression that they could have driven the rover in that area? Let's accept concrete.
You know, there's nothing worse than somebody that's been back talking about somebody else's equipment that's going to go. I've been over on the Skylab program, and I can't tell you the slopes that the rover is designed to run on, but somebody else, I'm sure, can get that information for you. There's a full design spec on that vehicle, its range, the terrain that it can go over, the size craters it can cross with that tipping upside down, you know, the whole deal, and I'm not aware of those. I'm sure that it's in the order of, it's got to be able to run up and down 20-degree slopes, I'm sure.
Please. I thought what you were telling us about the 2-meter resolution, that could hide a lot of things which might prove impossible for the rover.
Well, only if there were that many boulders, you'd see shadows. Right? And you get 2-meter resolution, you get it at a low sun angle, a 2-meter boulder throws a 9-meter shadow. So, you know, you got to be careful with that, too. It's how you interpret the photograph.
Zach Strickland.
Pete, I have three unrelated questions. Based on the discomfort you and Alan Bean had, they took water up. I don't recall ever hearing them say, did they use it? Do you know if they drank water during their EVAs?
Yeah, I can't answer that. Don't know.
One is they remarked about not seeing the obvious presence of glass spheres. You guys apparently saw them all over.
It's all over the place, yeah.
Is this because of the Highlands area, do you think, or was it differences in observation, or what do you suppose?
No, I'm. Listen, the glass was all over the place. It was just very obvious. We saw big glass flashes that big. They're not going to miss things like that. I think that's probably a very interesting fact that they didn't find glass.
And third, based on their conversation, do you find that? Do you think they had more difficulty deploying the ALSEP than you and Al Bean did, or did they learn from you? Is what I'm asking.
Well, I'm not completely qualified to answer that because some of their equipment was different than ours. And I should say this, the geophone and that sort of thing, all our equipment, all we had to do was lay it out and turn it on. They had trouble with the same piece of equipment we had trouble with, and I got a sneaking suspicion if another one of them flies this time, they'll fix it. And that was the side, because we kept telling them that thing was going to fall over. It fell over on us, and they apparently didn't do anything about it. Now, there's a long lead time on those pieces of gear. I'm not sure that side wasn't already built by the time we came back, the one that went on 14.
CCIG keep falling over?
Yeah, it kept winding up. Same deal. That's the same. Those two pieces of equipment are tied together.
That could account for the trouble they've had with it?
I don't know. Well, our CCIG burned out right away. So maybe they didn't fix it. You got to talk to the guys that own that gear. We're chauffeurs for that.
Mary Bubra.
In view of the fact that they did have some problems with the dust, and I know you did, do you think those dust covers they put on help protect it, particularly when that side was going around there?
Where'd they have the dust covers?
They had dust covers over all the equipment on this mission. Before it was deployed, they were all covered up with dust covers.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't really know. I didn't even hear him remark about it. You just pulsed my memory. I forgot they did. They covered the whole deal with the dust covers, didn't they? No, I didn't hear him make any remarks about it. So I can't answer your question.
Help to not protect it. Do you know what happened to the gloves? Why are they bringing them back? There seemed to be some problem.
No, I didn't know they were bringing them back. They're bringing back EVA gloves?
One pair.
One EVA glove?
No. Well, one pair.
Well, I know. Didn't Ed have a leak in his suit? Maybe it was in his gloves or something. They wanted to see it.
Right here in front.
They mentioned the dust covering. I believe they described it as smaller objects and not particularly as much on larger objects. Did you encounter anything like that on your flight? And could you give us a description of, how much dust you think they had? Or
well, it's really not fair to say dust. That's lunar soil, but it's very fine. It's the places where you run into trouble with it is if you kick it onto something. They may have kicked someone. Now, I heard Captain Shepard say when he first got out that his landing gear pad was all the way down in the soil, and it actually spilled in the top of the pad. Now, that tells me that they were in a finer, looser material than we landed in. Our pad didn't even come close to being buried by that lunar material. Now, we had trouble. I say trouble. It was annoying to get involved with all this dust and dirt. It did get on the equipment. You're in a vacuum. It has a tendency to stick. And it's very difficult to wipe it off. It smears just like it was fine graphite. You can wipe the loose stuff off, but you leave a nice big smear if you try and do it. So we felt if we just did the best we could to shake it off and not try and brush it off a piece of gear. Now, we didn't have a brush. They had a brush. If I had a brush, I'd have tried. But to rub it with your hand, all you did was smear it. And I say that with regard to the ALSAP because that had thermal coatings on it, and they didn't want us to cover it. So I figured we did less covering of the thermal coatings by leaving what little bit was there than trying to get rid of it.
Is there a tendency of this fine soil or dust to fly, or is it pretty much confined to
smaller areas? You could see on the TV, it flies. It's going to go. It's just like if you did it down here and you looked at that pattern, you're going to get six times that pattern up there. When you stick your foot down, even though you're not looking down, you can see the dust landing out in front of you. It goes a long way. It's low gravity.
We'll take a couple more questions.
Pete, did you and the other troops in Mission Control know that old Sam Snead had brought along that golf ball?
The what?
The golf ball that Captain Shepard took a few swipes at. Did we know it was there? Was that a Shepard special surprise? Or, you know, did anybody know he was going to do this?
I didn't, no. I can't vouch for the rest of the guys.
One more question up here.
Talking about the golf ball, did you ever try to throw or hit something? Or kick something, to throw or kick something, a stone or something, just to see how far it would fly?
Yeah, the erectable S-band has two foam plastic covers on either end of it, and when I was disassembling that, and I noticed Al did the same thing when he was putting up his S-band, and you're just standing there, that's the world's handiest something to give it a little fling, and it just keeps going.
Okay, we may be acquiring the spacecraft about this time, so if there are not any more pressing questions, we'll wind it up now. Thanks a lot.